Let's go ahead and move on to our next presentation for this particular topic. Dr. Shannon Nybergs is an extension economist in the School of Economic Sciences at Washington State University and has recently taken over the directorship of the Western Center for Risk Management Education. And Shannon's primary extension effort is applied economics and related, which are related to livestock enterprises and risk management. As part of looking at the economics of livestock production system, Shannon has completed also hay and forage outlooks and tracks that hay and forage with respect to the livestock industry, as well as that industry itself. Shannon has been involved with projects examining the economics of infectious animal diseases and projects evaluating dairy nutrition, waste management, and economics of anaerobic digestion. As the director of the Washington State University Extension Western Center for Risk Management Education, he provides leadership for the extension risk management efforts in the 13 Western states and U.S. and Pacific Islands. Shannon, it looks like we are all set up and ready to go for you, so go ahead and take it away.
Great, Duane. Thank you very much. It's exciting for me to be able to present this topic because I think this hay and forage market is very interesting and very dynamic, and given its importance to animal agriculture, I think it's a little bit underrepresented in the agriculture economics research field. So I'm going to present today some of the issues and current conditions in the hay and forage market. And to do my presentation, I'd like to take a supply and demand framework. And using that supply and demand framework, you can look at this price trend. This is the price trend going from 2005 to current. It's the monthly average price, U.S. alfalfa average price. And you can see a dramatic increase in price changes and price volatility. This next graph matches both the price to a measure of historic price volatility that's used typically in the futures market transactions, the standard deviation over 12 months. In this case, it's 12 months is my trading period to measure that volatility. And if you look at this red line graph, you can see that the volatility through 2006, and if you went back further, you'd see relatively low volatility. But starting in 2007 to what is current, you see dramatic increases in that price volatility, and both changes up from 2006 to 2008. Price decreases from 2008 to 2010, and then last year a dramatic price increase in volatility over the past year. So we want to take this time and evaluate some of those factors that evaluated that price trend. One other point I wanted to make before we get into some other slides is that the importance of regional influences on the hay market. And in this graph, I overlaid the Washington monthly price against the U.S. average price. And you see it really points to that the hay market is has regional influences. And while the hay price went down across the United States around the 2010 area, as you look at that graph, in Washington, that price didn't see that much of a decrease. And that was due to some regional demand factors that Washington has relative to the United States. So as we go through the hay market part, we'll look at some regional differences and talk a little bit about the transportation, which is really part of the reason for these regional differences, is the transportation cost of hay limits large-scale distribution or large-distance distribution. So if we look at these primary supply factors, this is kind of the outline that I'll address on the supply side, is we're going to look at some alfalfa acres, all hay production in acres, the stocks, talk a little bit about corn silage, weather relative to drought, and the availability of irrigation water, through the season, and then some pasture and range outlook on the supply side. So if we look at this map, and it points to the regional basis of production, the dark green states are areas of high alfalfa acres, high alfalfa production. We see that California, Idaho, Montana, and the northern tier states are the primary acres of alfalfa that are grown in the United States, and less through the southern tier of the country. And if we look at the decline in acres from 2010 to 2011 on this regional basis, the percents are relative to the actual numbers, but it points to some regional differences and regional declines. And if you look at Washington State had a decline of 16% in their alfalfa acreage over that past year, and California was 5%, and you see these lighter green states through the west, Nevada, a decrease of 11%, and on through the nation. And what that points to is the overall trend in this alfalfa acreage of declining. And if we look from 1990, this graph goes from 1990 to last year, 2011. Over that time period, the alfalfa acres have decreased by about 6 million acres from 1990 to 2011, and that's approximately a 25% decline in the alfalfa acres over that time. And we see that that decline, I highlighted the period of high volatility from that previous graph from 2008 to 2011, and we see that period of high volatility is associated with the declining production levels across the country. So we have the declining acres, declining supply, and then this increased volatility, and we'll address that through the presentation as well. If we look at all hay production, when we talk about forages, we need to talk about both alfalfa and all hay. All hay is grass hay and timothy and other soybean hays and all other hay varieties combined together. And I put a trend line on this graph. The trend line is trending downwards across that same 1990 to 2011 period, showing that the hay production is declining over time across the country. And then note the dramatic decrease in all hay production from 2010 to 2011. And we can look at some drought maps later in the presentation that kind of points as to why that large decline occurred over this past year. But again, declining supply, increased volatility over that time period. If we look at stocks, just like we had carry out stocks in wheat and corn that was discussed previously, where there's some carry out stocks or end of year, beginning of next year stocks. These are December 1 stocks. And if you put your attention to the 2011 year on the right, our carryout stocks of hay are very low relative to previous periods. And even at a hay growers meeting in Washington a couple weeks ago, and we talked about what their stocks were and where they were on their stocks, and their comments, and their Washington producers, their comments was that they were completely sold out of any alfalfa stocks. And their existing stocks that they were clearing out were the grass hay stocks in the bottom of the pile, low quality stocks, potentially rain damaged, moisture damaged hay, and that they're moving those stocks out now. And there's another point observation of indicating of those tight carry out stocks leading into the start of next year. So we won't get any price relief on the purchasing side of hay of high stocks, whereas they're, as this graph shows, they're very low. So one of the things that we want to, that's important to consider as well is that the move from hay to silage production. As you talk to dairies, you look at feedlots and that what they are feeding is a roughage source. Oftentimes you talk to them and they're talking about putting up more silage. They're trying to combat their risk on hay and they're trying to look at other lower cost forages, and so they're looking at corn silage or other types of silage, whatever kind of silage that they can put up in their area, other hay silage, etc. And this graph shows the corn silage production in million tons from 2000 to 2011, and it shows that there's not been a dramatic increase in that corn silage production over the recent history. So we're not getting a lot of dramatic macro level production changes of the substitution away from the declining alfalfa and hay acres into corn silage. But that's an area that's of interest to dairy producers and animal agriculture in itself, is that how are we going to provide roughage in the diet, and are we going to be substituting towards corn silage? And this graph shows that there's not been a dramatic increase over the past year. So now let's turn a little bit to looking at some drought conditions. And I put this slide in to provide a complete definition of what that drought is. Certainly I'm not a climatologist, but the drought, as we've heard and we'll see, has been very dramatic, and it's very important, and it's very important to the supply condition of hay and forages and pasture. And I'll point your attention to this middle paragraph, that the long-term drought is cumulative, and that the intensity of the drought is dependent on current patterns and past weather patterns. And so we need to keep that in mind as we look at these drought maps. And that last paragraph is that the weather patterns can change, as they say in the definition, literally overnight. So you have to look at these drought conditions and pay close attention to current conditions and what those impacts have. But now let's look at just a few maps of drought severity and drought expectations into the future. And so this looks at this is August 2011 drought map. It shows in these purplish-colored southern tier states, not only in the southwest of Texas and New Mexico that's gotten a lot of publicity for their drought, but also on the southern tiers around Florida and Georgia that also have severe drought at the end of last year, August 2011. So that's one point in time to consider. This map is one of the most current maps that you can find. It's February 28, 2012, and it shows that across the South there are still areas with extreme drought, but some moderation with some moisture that occurred through the winter months, but still showing moderate to severe drought, and also through moderate to severe drought through Texas and the those Texas, Oklahoma, into Colorado, into those states, but also currently into other southwestern states, looking at California, looking at Nevada, looking at the northern tier states, if you remember where alfalfa is being produced in the Corn Belt, looking at North Dakota and into Minnesota, is having some dryness and drought currently. And even into Washington through the Columbia Basin region, if you're familiar with Washington and that central part of the state, even a few, those were the comments across people who I've talked to in the Columbia Basin, is that they were dry through the winter. Building on that comment that drought conditions can change overnight. This week, we've had a series of rain events and moisture events through Washington and the Pacific Northwest. And so it shows that it's a very dynamic, the drought's very dynamic, and current weather patterns can have great impact on that. And lastly, if we look at a drought outlook, this is a map of drought outlook. It was released March 1st, 2012. It's for the spring drought outlook condition stretching from March to May, and it shows some areas of concern. Certainly if you're in this area, it points to preliminary indications, potential indications of continued persistent drought to potentially intensify, or maybe some improvements as you look at the green slashed areas in Colorado and western Texas and through northern California and into the Columbia Basin area of central Washington and north central Oregon. But this does point to some potential concerns, particularly with hay forage and pasture in these areas as you look at the supply of those forage types in those areas. And so pasture conditions, and this is some of the most current information that I could find on pasture conditions. And so let's look at this for a minute on beef cows on the left, beef cows in states with 40% poor to very poor pasture conditions. If we compare 2010 to 2011, you see a dramatic increase in the percent of beef cows that were in poor to very poor pasture conditions at the end of last year. Almost half of the beef cow population at the end of last year were in poor pasture conditions. And then on the right-hand side, the cows in states with 40% good to excellent condition, you see some decrease in the percent of total as you can compare 2010 to 2011. So the pasture conditions are also of a concern. They were a concern going out of this last year, and let's refer back to this area of drought persistence. If they were poor out of last year, and it's expected to be poor next year, that leads to some very serious concerns on hay and forage conditions for those producers in that area. Okay, let's lastly look at snowpack measurements. Snowpack measurements are important for irrigation reservoir supplies and impacts on, certainly as we look in Washington on the Columbia Basin, on those irrigated alfalfa acres. And in the green is a relatively good snowpack. As I mentioned, that we're having the weather event this week. Some of these mountain areas are getting 2 feet of snow in addition just over this past couple days. And so the snowpack on the northern tier is looking good to better. But in comparison to the Sierra Nevadas in California, those snowpack levels are red. And so those red snowpacks are low snowpacks. And as of this map date of March 1st, those were low snowpack areas. And if you look at the trade information from California, they're having some water allocation declines. And what impact that have, that should be considered. I'm not an expert on how severe those water allocation declines are for those California producers, but certainly California is an important alfalfa producing state and an alfalfa demanding state, so those low snowpack levels are not only important for hay forage and pasture conditions, but all of agriculture through California. Okay, so just quickly to review the supply outlook, we have hay acreage trending downward. We have the issue of Roundup Ready alfalfa undergone a period of legal challenges and court challenges and rulings, but the current decision is that there was a U.S. District Court in California decision affirming USDA reauthorization and resumption of sale and planting of Roundup Ready alfalfa effective just recently, February 2nd, 2012. What impact that has on production will that help producers view alfalfa acreage as a better crop alternative because it is a biotechnology plant? We'll have to see, but that's certainly an issue, not only on the production side, but for the on the export market side. Roundup Ready alfalfa is an issue of concern, and we can talk about that a little bit more when we get to the export demand tables. That third bullet on the expected drought persistent across large areas is going to be very important. And even that, the note below that is the unknown pasture response on those pastures that have got rain that were in drought. What is that forage response? How bad, how much harm were those forage plants, how much harm did those forage plants incur relative to that drought, and will they recover once they get rain, and how will they recover is unknown. So that's another issue on that, the drought continuing its effects into 2012. There's ongoing tight supply conditions with severely constrained conditions in some regions. Okay, so now let's turn our attention to the hay and forage demand. Make a few points on this. So the hay and forage demand is the drive demand of the livestock production sector. So depending on the profitability of those livestock sectors is going to, in turn, relay impacts on their ability to pay and their overall demand for those forages. And the second point is that forages, as you see in that nutrition pyramid, is that the forages and are the building blocks of the forage of the ration. And so as nutritionists dealing with dairies, nutritionists dealing with feedlots, and even horse and hobby farms, they have to supply forages as part of the diet to their animals. And what that means is that there's a very inelastic demand for a minimum level of forages, and so that in turn leads to that high price volatility as supply gets constrained, the demand and need to provide this basic input on the ration is increased. So let's look at a few of the livestock sectors, and I won't go into great detail of this because we're going to have these presentations in the next section of this webinar conference, and so we'll have detailed discussions on beef and dairy. So I'm just going to highlight just a few points to make the forage presentation complete. And Randy mentioned in his presentation the limited margin of dairy, and this graph shows that in two different ways. It shows the federal milk order price. We see some recent decline in that milk order price, and so there's not a lot of price increase or price growth, unlike the beef that are seeing record prices, the lambs that are seeing record prices. The milk price is relatively low. It's not providing a lot of profitability support to the dairy sector. And in this lower graph on the right-hand side, the milk feed price ratio, that's a common graph produced by ERS through the USDA, looking at the profitability of the dairy sector. There has been some discussion that the ratio is might not be showing as profitable as using direct prices because of the price changes of milk and other factors. But it does point to a relative historic trend in profitability. And if you look at the milk feed price ratio of being 3 or greater for them to be profitable, the whole period, all the graphs are below 3. And importantly, for the start of 2012, that milk price ratio is very tight. The inventory numbers are relatively stable. There's about a little over 92 million head of dairy cattle that have to be fed. So that's looking at a demand factor, of mouths to feed, so to speak, that's relatively stable. On the beef side, that's different. On the beef side, the 2012 cattle inventories are as low as they were in the 1950s. A very dramatic decrease in cattle inventories, partly due to the drought, but also partly due to liquidation of due to high prices and price responses and profit taking on the cow-calf sector on not expanding herds and culling, and strong culling because of high culling prices. So those culling, those cattle inventories are low. They do have ability to pay. There's record high prices for calves, culls, and market weight animals. But the beef cattle production in the drought areas, drought-stricken areas, face significant challenge because not only do they have to pay high prices for wintering hay costs, but because of their there's no forage availability, they have to pay high hay prices to keep their cattle alive, so to speak, throughout the year. Whereas typical, they're on low-cost forages, and so that those are significant challenges facing those areas. So let's make a few comments. I want to make a few comments, and then we'll follow up. We'll make a few comments on the export hay demand because that's a very dynamic and interesting market. And so the western states are the primary exporters of hay. Japan is by far the largest market destination, followed by South Korea and Taiwan. The United Arab Emirates and China are increasingly important markets. They provide some variability in demand, export demand, that impacts the market on the demand side. They're in and out. Compressed hay is the primary form exported. There are some cubes and pellets, but compressed hay is by far the largest share of what's exported. And that last point, the exchange rates are extremely important. The hay prices are high, but our exchange rates are low. That is very important on influencing their demand. And also the backhaul shipping containers. Firms look to backhaul containers to the Asian market, Japan, China, etc., it's those empty backhaul containers are really important on making that transportation cost low enough to make that market feasible and feasible from the West Coast. Interesting on some comments on the price discovery on export hay. So the contracts between the hay exporters and hay producers are being negotiated now and have been negotiated over the past few weeks. They're negotiated in the spring of the production year as those exporters make their price predictions, have established some contract delivery points, and they go back and make those contracts. It's an early price discovery for hay that sets a price point in the market. It's very important for Washington and California, too, as those price points are set in the market before production. And the hay quality is absolutely critical. Hay quality is very important on delivering against those contracts. And hay quality points to restrictions on Roundup Ready alfalfa that Asian markets do not want genetically modified crops. They do not want Roundup Ready alfalfa, and so it's a big production issue across the region is contamination of seed and spread of Roundup Ready alfalfa into the fields and tests for delivering the hay that is certified Roundup Ready free is going to become increasingly important into the future. This is a table that I keep track of. It's a very interesting table looking at the market share between California ports and Pacific Northwest ports. And the contracts, the importers, the Asian importers are very put the exporters in California and the Northwest in a competitive framework as to where they're going to source their hay, whether it be California or these Pacific Northwest points. And this table provides the Department of Commerce export data in looking at what that market share is between these two regions. And it goes from 2007 the 2011, and it's the volume in the top segment of that graph. It's the percent change in volume exported from year to year through those numbers, and the market share as it moves back and forth between California and the Pacific Northwest. And you can see on the market share in 2007 and 2008, we really, the Northwest had a higher market share, and we've lost some of that market share over the years to increasing exports originating out of California ports. But, and then jumping back to the top graph, you see that there is a slow and continued increase in the volume exported out of the West Coast states. So that's an interesting graph to maybe come back and look at if we have more time. So let's review the outlook in just the last few slides to finish this up. So the dairy herd is relatively stable, but dairy profitability continues to be challenging. The impacts of that is that there's substitution for hay for other lower-cost roughages in the ration. If you talk to dairymen, they are always looking to, because of their profitability concerns, they would like to feed more hay, but because of the high cost, they are substituting away for it as much as they can find substitutes that will work in their ration. One of the issues is also a month-to-month contract. Typically, historically, if you thought about managing your dairy, you wanted to contract and secure your hay supply over the year. But because of the high cost, because of cash flow concerns, there's been an increase on month-to-month contracts for the purchase of dairy needs, and that's increasing their risk as that goes through. Beef herd inventories at historic lows, but cattle prices are at record high, provides them some ability to pay, as I said before, but the drought-stricken areas face significant challenges to 2012 on pasture and range conditions and wintering costs of needing to purchase hay. Horses and hobby ruminants have an inelastic demand for small-sized baled hay. That's becoming an increasingly important issue because most of the alfalfa producers do not want to produce hay using small-sized bales. And so those supplies is declining, but given their inelastic demand, those prices are increasing, and that might turn out to be a niche market for some alfalfa producers or hay producers as well. The export market is expected to be stable to increasing because they also have an inelastic demand. The favorable exchange rates that are expected to continue, but as part of that export market, the early price discovery contracts that we talked about, but those contracts are confidential, so it's hard to find out what those prices are being contracted on to get indications moving forward through the season. Transportation costs are going to become an increasingly important determining point of sale price. As you look at if they have to transport hay from northern tier states down to drought-stricken areas in the south, they were paying reports of well over $300 a ton for hay delivered to those southern tier states that were impacted by drought. But as everybody knows, and the news is on these increasing fuel costs and maybe potentially record high fuel costs, the feasibility of transporting that hay north to south is going to be challenged, and the ability of people to pay is going to be challenged if indeed those droughts, that drought-stricken areas continue. And so that was that last point. Lastly, in conclusion, drought, tight supply, and inelastic demand resulted in record high prices in 2011. Early seasonal drought indicates expanding drought areas, and it's a bullish outlook for 2000 hay and forage prices, and that's why I left, I re-put this U.S. alfalfa price, showing where we left off in 2011 and potentially where we'll be in 2012. And lastly, there's limited opportunity to hedge hay and forage price risk, and we could expand on that if there's any questions, but I want to, get done. So I'll stop there.
Thank you, Shannon. Give us a lot to think about in the hay market. The presentation talked about tight supplies in to a fairly large extent. Are there regional implications for the tight supplies in the Northwest and going into the future here? The drought has been in the South Central, but can you touch a little bit more on regional implications for tight supplies and how we might satisfy that in a regional fashion? Or is there just nothing available?
I think the best answer to that, Duane, is that there is nothing available. Even the tight supplies in the Northwest, we have great hay growing conditions, but we have decreasing acreage because people are not expanding alfalfa, reestablishing alfalfa fields. We talked about that at the producers meeting as they went around the room and go, "Who's have you seen any expansion in hay acres being expanded?" And there was very limited reestablishment, and most people were taking crops out because it was this hard, risky crop to grow. There's a lot of field operations that you have to take through the cuttings, and a lot of risk that has to be incurred. Not only on the risk is in rain on first cutting hay. If you look at the past several years, is that in California and in Washington and in Idaho, when the producers were ready to produce first cutting alfalfa, is that there were rain events that caused widespread damage to the hay, and so that risk is high, and so there's not an expansion of hay acres, and that's leading to continued tight supplies, and so I think that's pretty well across the country, certainly across the West.